going to lower our awesome theme music, and I'm going to raise up our microphones. I hope you all had a chance to just hear that commercial about the Christmas Carol that's going to be playing at our neighbors next door December. What is that? I just put it away. December 8th through the 17th. So come and catch out. I'm not having a fun time with my words. Come and get you some holiday cheer. All right, let's just start the Aging Well Together show and not do other announcements. Though I do have one. Alicia's here. We have another fun commercial before we officially start the Aging Well Together show. She's looking at me so excited. The Seymour Center, our senior center here on Homestead Road, for next week is doing a listening party for the Aging Well Together show. Alicia, there's going to be a party about us.
A listening show.
So it is once.
It's on the road.
I know. It's once a quarter. They're going to start doing this. And so next Thursday, December 7th, is the first listening party at the Seymour Center from 2 to 3. And we're going to have a Zoom camera set up here so people can listen to us and watch us. So we have to put on makeup.
I have to put on my lipstick.
I know. Actually, we're wearing lipstick now, but we're going to make sure we are now TV ready for next Wednesday. So, next Thursday. So, listeners, if you want to see what we look like when the show is going on, go to the Seymour Center from 2 to 3 on Thursday, December 7th. And we are doing this to celebrate Senior Driver Safety Awareness Week. And the occupational therapist, Marie Dagger, who's part of the Aging Transitions team, will be on the air with us. And so this should be really fun. So check that out. All right, let's get into our show. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. It is the last day of November, and it's the last day of National Family Caregivers Month in honor. What is happening to my words today, Alicia? In honor of all of the family caregivers, including myself and Alicia, whose work extends throughout all 12 months, not just in November, today's show is all about resources to help families support their loved ones. Today, it's about the resources through UNC, the University of North Carolina's geriatrics clinic, and general support for caregivers. I'm excited for all the information we'll learn together. But before we dive into our show, I want to give a shout-out, as always, to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. Though as much as we love our station mates, we wish there was some heat on in here. It's a little chilly, so we're having a cold and chilly. Our hearts are warm, but our bodies are chilly. So you are listening to us at the station. You are also welcome to listen to us via streams. Anytime, you can go to WCOMFM.org or through your streaming services. We're picked up by a bunch. So many thanks to listening to us. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the wonderfully helpful team from the Orange County Department on Aging. Please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. If you want more information on any of the issues we discussed, and I am expecting that to be of this show, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can email us. To be specific, you are emailing me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. That's all one long word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. Or please connect with the Orange County Department on Aging. They can be reached at, hope you are not driving, get a pencil and a piece of paper. They can be reached at 919-968-2070 or through their website, which is orangecountync.gov/aging. I'm also so excited. I've been announcing this for now, I think a little over a month now, but all of our recorded shows have turned into podcasts, and they are all available on the Orange County Department on Aging's website. Yay! I know we need to get a sound machine. Santa, if you're listening, we want fun sound machine to do little, like, I'm totally going to look that up for us. So when you go to the website, orangecountync.gov/aging, there's now a link to the Aging Well Together radio show where you can listen to the past 24 shows. This is our 25th show,
wow.
So it'll be 25 shows. I know. We've been around for a while now. 6 months, 25 shows.
It's like we just started.
Well, considering I can't put my words together today, you would think that we had just started. All right, let's get going. Quick shout-outs. A shout-out to the Carborough Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing music. You'll hear a lot more at the closing. And I'm excited that they're going to come and perform live in January.
Yay.
It's January 11th. The band's going to be here.
Party,
we got a Zoom
party
out
right
too.
Here.
I know. And then also, as you hear, welcome to my returning fabulous co-host, Alicia Reed, wellness instructor extraordinaire, for joining
she
us.
She gives me those good titles, but thank you.
I do. I give you fun titles.
Yeah, I like them.
Okay, and before turning it over to our guests, I should introduce myself. If you don't know already, I am your host, Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services, and I continue to work with older adults and their families, connect with supportive resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 53, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, now, I've been really excited for the show. I know I say that all the time. But I'm really excited. We have been trying to get these guests on for a while and really wanted this to be part of National Family Caregivers Month. Mm-hmm. And so it's the last day of the month. We got them in. I'm super excited to welcome Jennifer Muse and Brian Godfrey, the clinical social workers with the UNC Geriatrics Clinic. We're going to learn all about the services and resources they provide. But first, we'll say hi and give them an opportunity to just say hello and check their microphones. Hi, Jennifer. Hi,
hello.
Brian.
Thanks,
hello.
Heather and Alicia, for having us here.
Yes, it's a pleasure
to
be here.
I know.
Nice voices for the radio. He's been practicing. He's got
the radio voice ready to go.
You do. Okay. So we're going to get all up into the business of UNC and the geriatrics clinic. But mm-hmm. first, and there are just... I can't see them. There are too many microphones out of the way, so I was like, all right, I got to okay. see them better. Okay. All right, I can see Jennifer. Brian, I can see you now. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you into the aging space and, as social workers, the supportive social, you know, heart world. So, Jennifer, we'll start with you. What brought you into this work?
Well, as with anyone, I think it's an interesting journey that lands us where we're going. So I, as a child, was in the hospital a bit, which piqued my interest in healthcare. That's kind of where it all began. In college, I studied clinical psychology. I actually was an occupational therapist for more than two decades before changing over to social work. I got my degree in 2020. So I'm a new social worker,
wow.
relatively new.
What a great journey.
Yes.
Yes,
it's a good combination of skills, I find. So I have been with the geriatrics clinic now just over a year. I'm a little bit of a newbie, and I am loving it. It is vibrant and warm, and our role, I feel, is so valuable. And it's just Brian and I there as the social workers, and I think we make a pretty
good team.
Excellent team.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
They make a good team.
They do look like that we're all bundled up. I'm glad it's a warm place to work. Figuratively.
Yes, exactly.
Literally, right now it's a cold place to work. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Brian, I've heard your name for a number of years now, but it's the first time we're meeting. Tell us about you.
Yeah, I've been a social worker with the geriatrics clinic about 6 years now here in Chapel Hill. I originally am from Pennsylvania, and I, too, had a winding path to get to my present role. I originally was an English major because in my house, books were everywhere. Everybody was reading. We barely watched TV. We'd be reading books, and so naturally that's what I did, too. And so I figured, well, I may as well major in English because I seem to know a lot about that. So I got my undergrad in that, and then I said, well, what do I do? How do I make money as an English major? Everyone said teach. I said, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to teach. I mean, maybe publishing. That would be good.
That makes sense.
What if I made the books that I read? I mean, I buy them. Someone else would too, right? I liked detail-oriented work, so I became a copy editor. I moved to Boston. I got a master's degree in publishing and writing. And then in the first semester, I realized I did not enjoy this field. In my very first class, it was called Book Publishing Overview. They were talking about how you choose the right paper for your book and how you choose the weight and the size and the color and the thickness and the texture and the cost. And I didn't care. Mm-hmm. I just didn't care at all. But I'd already moved to Boston and was invested in the program. So I raced through it in three semesters, got it done, and I said, well, what do I do now? And so clearly, the next option was to teach at a cooking school.
Yes. Clearly. You are fascinating. You're not going to get... Forget the geriatric stuff. There's so much to dive into with you two right now and your changing career paths. We're going to have a whole other show on finding yourself
there
a few
you go.
Degrees in.
Yeah,
right, go on.
There is no right or wrong to this journey. You just go where it takes you. So I was not teaching cooking at the cooking school, Le Cordon Bleu in Boston. I was actually teaching English, and of all things, and a lovely little class called Cultural Diversity. And that's what got me interested in the differences between others, how we navigate and perceive these, and all the gaps that there are in our system that are so hard to bridge. Mm-hmm. And so when that school went under gainful employment scrutiny, they were charging a great deal to basically prepare people to be line chefs.
Oh.
And the government didn't like that, so shut them down. And I ended up looking for my next best thing, which turned out to be geriatrics.
Okay,
that was a big jump.
So
I have my story how I got into geriatrics. What's your story? How did that happen from cooking to...
Right? So it all started with that class, Cultural Diversity. I mean, I had been interested in women's studies, and I'd done a little bit with that. I was a Spanish minor, so I know I learned how to speak Spanish, and I got really into that side of things. And there was something about that class where I just realized there's so much more I need to learn about other ways of being in this world. And the resources that are there or are not there and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I said, I want to get into social work. And so I just started looking at cool programs and classes that I thought were interesting. And I came across University of Pennsylvania, and they had this couple electives that I thought were fantastic. So I signed up. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I didn't even know it was an Ivy League school.
I was going to say,
I had no idea.
It's cool that normally you don't just like, yeah, I'll take that class.
I had no idea.
Oh,
okay. So I was just like, well, I'll apply. Yeah, we'll see if I get in there.
Smart and a little clueless.
Yeah. Hey, I was cooking. I could go to school here.
So go on.
That's an excellent description. Not only did I get in, but then they never offered those electives the whole time I was there.
Oh, there's a bait and switch. I've seen
that.
I've even seen that at UNC. I love UNC, and I'm a double tar. But yes, there are classes that are listed. And I've seen it in our high schools. It's in catalogs, but then if they don't have enough students or they don't have enough professors. And so, go on.
Yeah, but anyway, long story short. So I got into that. I really love the social work stuff, and they give you the option to be a clinical social worker doing therapy, or they give you the option to do more policy work.
Sure.
I wasn't interested in policy, at least at the time, and so I became a clinical social worker. And I worked in North Philadelphia with underserved people providing talk therapy directly.
Mm.
I did that for almost 4 years and burned out really hard doing that work. Really, really hard. That was hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a break. For about 8 months, I was unemployed looking for the next best thing, and I stumbled across this position at geriatrics.
And you were in Philadelphia.
But you were in Philadelphia.
I was in Philadelphia.
I was thinking that's a stumble. That's like a roll stumble jump.
Yeah.
I'm no longer
asking
questions.
Amazing.
I'm just going with
it. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go with
it. Sorry,
with
Jennifer. He just
right?
added so many Easter eggs.
Yeah, he did.
And I had to live this journey.
So you
this
leaped.
Was fun.
You leaped here.
Yeah. So, I found it online, obviously, and then I applied. I actually had to fly down twice for interviews for the position. And then one of the reasons I got it was that I spoke Spanish.
Oh.
And we needed that.
Very good.
Yeah,
so all that cooking worked out.
Wow.
What a journey,
and
right?
Now,
so
how long have you been with the geriatrics clinic?
Yeah, about 6 years now.
Wow.
Six years. So here I was. I'd never lived in the South. I had no idea. I'd never lived, I never worked for a big hospital system or any big company before. I never worked in geriatrics before. So I had a lot to learn.
Destiny. It was destiny.
But I had some amazing preceptors and trainers.
That's good.
Yeah.
This is great. Oh, okay. So we're going to – I want to just stay with this, but I won't, except for that I will say that I'm so glad I knew you for a whole, 10 minutes before I found out you were an English major. I'm not easily intimidated these days, but English majors and English professors used to intimidate me quite a bit because they know the proper way to speak and write, and I'm like,
they make me slow down talking, and I talk real fast.
I should slow down anyway, but I just feel like, I don't know.
So Here's what I learned, though, in cultural diversity is that language is a construct, right? And the way that we use language, we built that. We decided what was right and wrong. And guess what? We can change that right here, right now, if we wish.
Well, and I'm looking at Alicia. I think that's a good subject for Afternoon Talk with Alicia someday,
I know,
is how language
thinking.
Is. And I have read that language and grammar and ways of pronouncing things. It's also an interesting form of oppression and privilege, and so we're not going to go into that now, but I could see
that.
I'm looking at Alicia because we have a topic that we, oh my gosh.
One
all
day,
right.
We'll talk.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. All right, but we brought you in here to talk about the UNC Geriatrics Clinic. Let's start with a basic overview. Jennifer, I'll turn to you about what is the UNC Geriatrics Clinic? Who's involved? How do people get involved? I have lots of follow-ups with that, so I realize it's a big tent question.
No, that's great. So the Geriatrics Clinic operates as both a primary practice mm-hmm. and a specialized practice. Mm-hmm. So someone may have their primary care provider there in the clinic, or they may have a primary care provider outside of the clinic and then come for consultation. So the majority of our patients are 65 and older. We do take people that are younger that have conditions similar to mm-hmm. those that are experienced by many in the geriatrics population. We have all of our providers are specialized in gerontology. We have, what would you say, 12 to 20 providers at any given time.
A dozen providers, mm-hmm. maybe a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are located at Easttown. So off of the main campus, which makes it nice for our patients and families as well. Parking is easy. It's free. There's valet parking.
Yes.
There's a lot of pros.
Great. I remember, yes, when it used to be on the campus, and then at one point it was behind that Hardee's, I thought.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
So now it's across from the old spaceship.
Brand new building.
Correct. It's a brand new building.
Yes.
It's very accessible.
And there's a Wegmans across the street.
That's
true.
That's
what's not to love about that. So to be even... more basicer. Tell us, for those who may not
that
be...
That was not good.
There you go. I'm going to specifically mess up words just to have fun with you.
Excellent.
It'd be funner to talk about...
That's wicked awesome.
Us, I know. I did call my wicked. I showed Jennifer my Boston-ness. So what is gerontology? And for those who may not be familiar with a geriatrician or geriatrics as opposed to your typical primary care, whichever of you wants to take. What is a geriatrician?
Yeah, we can banter back and forth. How
mm-hmm.
about that? Yeah, so I think the terms are very similar. I think gerontology refers to the study of aging and growing older,
mm-hmm.
and a geriatrician is usually a medical doctor who will specialize in that field and provide that medical care. So many people are wondering, like, why would I need a specialist or even, like, just a geriatrician as my PCP? Why don't I just see a internal medicine doctor or a family medicine doctor? And, you know, you might not necessarily need it, but the fact that the geriatrician specializes in conditions of older adults, I think it means a couple things, right? So I think when it comes to medication in particular, most people take medication, and as people get older, they tend to be on more and more medications. Mm-hmm. They also tend to see more and more specialists, and then the meds can get sort of confused, or there can be conflicts that start to come up. But as people get older, their bodies change how they respond to meds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think every doctor is aware of to some extent, but I think we specialize in it. So we're particularly aware of what they call polypharmacy, when
mm-hmm.
you're taking 10 or more medications. And we're very aware of the medication interactions between these, how it affects the bodies of older adults, and how we need to pay particular attention to things like falls risk, which might not be on the radar of someone who specializes with younger people.
Sure. And this is a good commercial update to say, for those of you who want to learn more about polypharmacy and deprescribing, we did have Dr. Delon Canterbury
exactly.
on.
I thought about that.
I think it was like the seventh show. If you go to the website, you can, the Orange County website, and really dive into polypharmacy. But that's great to hear that that's a specific focus.
Mm-hmm.
I know, and I'm more of a policy person and a workforce development. We have such an embarrassment of riches here in our area to have over a dozen geriatricians at UNC
mm-hmm.
because if those of you that are like me and geek out on workforce projections, one of the projections they look at is the very small number of geriatricians per person nationally. That's one of the big things they talk about, right, in the supply chain of providers for older adults, that there's not a lot of geriatricians nationally. And yet here in the Chapel Hill area, thanks to UNC, thanks for North Carolina, we have quite a number because they are trained and practice here at UNC. So kind of do that little fascinating thing. All right, so you have a clinic, and people can come either for their primary care or for specialty consultation. How do people get seen or join the clinic? I mean, can they just call, or how do they learn about you all?
I will speak, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that people can call the clinic and just ask to become established as a patient if they're looking for it to be their primary care practice, and then they'll be mailed a welcome packet to fill out and bring with them, and they'll be scheduled with one of the geriatricians in the clinic. In terms of, if they want the consultation in the clinic, then their primary care provider could refer them over for that, and that, helps establish the collaboration between the two doctors.
That's correct.
And then, I'm going to come a little closer to the mic or bring the mic to you. You bring the mic to you so you don't have to smush yourself.
How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, you're making great points.
Sorry about that.
No, you were loud enough, but I was like, I want you even a little louder so people can hear this great information. So, is there a long wait? I know sometimes that can be an issue when people want to join a new clinic. Can they call and be seen right away, or is it like, okay, we'll see in a few months? How is that?
It varies. It really does. It depends on the season. It depends on, the demand. I mean, and it does move in waves sometimes. There were times when you could get a next day appointment. I mean, but that hasn't been for a while. I think
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I know when people move here, I work with so many older adults, and when they move here and they want to know if there's a practice, I said, well, give a call and see if they can have you.
So I just encourage people to call and ask. One of the good things about our clinic is that we're a teaching practice, right? Mm-hmm. And so every year or every 2 years, we have new fellows coming
in.
Exactly. New people coming in who have no caseload, and they're eager to get lots of new patients. Right. So, and of course, some will transfer over and we'll fill those. But we're always taking new patients.
Okay.
And so you can always call and learn about when the next appointment would be. I think nowadays it's a couple months to get a new patient appointment.
I've made appointments, and you're right. It's not long. It's simple. It's the doctors, I'm in a rotation now. The two are going out, but I guess they're coming in.
Yes, you can say I'm also not just a co-host. I'm also a patient.
Oh, just like a commercial.
I'm also their best customer.
Keeps us honest.
That,
it's good.
That the wait is not long. I had my neighbors sign up as well. And and they were able to get an appointment less than 30 days. And I think that's good.
There you go.
That is good.
That is good.
While we're doing the logistics. And then typical, you take insurance, I would think. And do you have care for folks that may be uninsured? Or how does that work? Jennifer's nodding her head.
Yes, correct. Correct. Okay. Yes.
All right. Anything else about the joining in before I dive into? Okay.
No, that's
all
great.
All right, and remind me. You don't have to remind me. I have a question here that I want to dive into the academic part of it in a little bit, but I still want to do kind of the big picture. And now talking about each of your roles as social workers at the clinic, what is that? What are your roles? How are you? Because that's kind of unique, right?
I haven't seen them.
My doctor's practice, there's a lot of doctors and nurses there, but there are no social workers.
Mm-hmm.
Others. So right there, that's unique.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your roles.
When do you get involved?
That's a good question.
Because at what point do you get involved?
That's a great question.
So I can come to your office.
Right? I love talking about this because it's changed over time since I've been here. But I want to really emphasize that point. We are blessed to even be here at the clinic because it's so true. Most doctor's offices don't have social workers. And that work might be handled by the physician or the nursing team. They do their best to meet these needs, and they often do an awesome job. But there's some things that social workers have an expertise in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is about knowing about community resources
right.
and helping connect people to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm also really good at filling out forms, and the doctors appreciate that. So.
That's very
English major, right?
So, oh, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. So what do we do, and how do we get involved, right? So I think, what do we do? I like to describe my role as, my job is to go out into the community and go online and learn about as much as I possibly can that could support seniors who usually want to live in the community, maybe in their home independently, as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Safely, of course. And so I want to know in every county, what are the best resources for home care? What about transportation? What if you need food support? You know, all the things you would think about. And then some of them you might not, like how do you get a shower chair if you can't afford one and is it covered by insurance?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, right? What do you do when you need an in-home physical therapy but you're not technically homebound?
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to do that.
Yes.
Right? But you have to learn it, right? And a lot of people wouldn't know unless you've been doing this all day, every day for a few years. So that's also kind of when we get involved, right? So if our role is to figure out what all this stuff is and connect people to it, then now we got to meet with people.
Right. Yes.
How do the people get to us?
Right. Exactly.
Right? And there's a few.
Alicia's great question.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So there's a few ways that it can go. I think the most common way at our clinic in particular is that the patient or the caregiver or both will meet with the doctor.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And the doctor will go, you know what? Mm-hmm. You know who could help with this?
It sounds like a job for Brian. The dynamic dude. Wonder Twin Powers.
Activate.
And they send us a referral.
That's
and
nice,
so
a referral.
Sometimes, if we're right there in the clinic, the doctor might come by our door and just knock, knock. Hey, I got this person in room 3. Would you mind coming and talking with them about, well,
wonderful.
Transportation
great.
Or whatever? And we can often do that. We can just drop what we're doing, go chat with them, give them a resource, give them our card, and we can follow up later, right?
Right.
Other times, or if we're not free, you know, maybe the person would prefer a call and they got to get out. That's
mm-hmm.
totally fine. So we get the referral. We'll call the patient, the caregiver, both, maybe conference call, whatever we need to do. I want everyone on the same page to know these are your options.
Mm-hmm.
This is
yes.
what's out here. And I want to really stress to people, too, that I have no skin in the game, right? I want
yes.
what you want,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you want to stay at home, I want to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to move to assisted living, I want to make that happen, right? But I want you to know these are all the options. Here are the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the resources available and not available to help you.
Well, and the personal contact is so important because sometimes we think we're going in to talk about transportation, and then in speaking with the patients and the families, we find out that there's these other needs they didn't even realize resources existed for.
Right.
And so a lot of that personal communication and contact really opens up, right, the ways that we can help. And
that's so wonderful. I was thinking about as patients, as family caregivers, we don't know what we don't know.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, so
exactly.
we don't even know to ask for things. I'm always amazed when I'm talking with people that they may not realize that their support for meals or their support
right.
for transportation or that taking a shower would be easier with a shower chair and how to get that.
Well, and so many patients and caregivers are also isolated, and so they don't really have the knowledge.
Right.
They haven't talked to other people that know of these resources
mm-hmm.
or whatnot. They
mm-hmm.
don't
yes.
exactly what you said. They're overwhelmed. They don't know what they don't know.
Oh, I love you all. You know, we should have a little holiday party of the people we love. You guys, you two, you folks, and the folks at the Aging Transitions team, their social work
yeah.
team, and the heavy and they were the ones that referred. Thank you, Kim and
yeah.
Kendall and Lydia and Marie, who said, "Hey, bring in the UNC folks." There's such a parallel between these resources that exist for our community members,
right.
and you have a special in because you're right there in the medical group, right when things are happening, right when people
yeah.
need it, right then in the moment.
Yes.
And so then you come and you provide these resources. I love that it sounds like you're a bit of an investigator, you know, always trying
mm-hmm.
to search that out. So you also have, I know, Brian and Jennifer and I were emailing before this, and actually I was working with a client about a year ago, and I heard you had something called the Chronic Care Management Program.
Mm.
Tell us about that program, because that seems a little bit more programmy.
It is. So that is a Medicare program that accepts patients who have two or more chronic conditions, and what it provides in our clinic is a comprehensive care plan, a point person in the clinic for the patient and the family. So at this point, there's 3 of us that are doing the chronic care management, Brian and I, and one of our wonderful nurses named Liz. And so we become the point person for the patients that have the chronic care, that are in the chronic care management program. We provide basically monthly outreach to those patients and families to check in on how things are going, to follow up, and to investigate what might be going on, what resources might be helpful that they may or may not know exist, or to check on how those resources are going for them,
mm-hmm.
right? Did the transportation work for them? Are there glitches? Do they need support in smoothing that out? So that is something that is offered to some of the patients in our clinic, and it's a wonderful program. It provides kind of continuity of care over
time.
That's
what I was wondering.
And real relationships. Because
and the follow-up.
And the follow-up,
the follow-up is amazing.
Automatic.
Huge. Mm-hmm. And I love that this is covered by Medicare. So the patients don't have to pay for this, right? Or do they have to pay a copay or something?
Sometimes there's a copay. In our clinic, we try and target the patients and families that will not be charged for the program. Some choose to go forward with it regardless.
Sure. But that's probably not a lot of money. And the reason why I'm thinking this is back in the day, a few years ago when I was doing private care management work, I did similar resources, and I was expensive. I mean, that was a lot. And I remember I talked with someone, and she mentioned, she's like, well, I also have Brian. I'm like, well, then work with Brian. He doesn't charge you. Like, don't, you know, I don't need the business to exploit that. Like, if you can get this great service that's part of your physician's office and it's a covered, you know, service,
right,
do that.
And
so
what I really like about it is that it builds the relationships, right?
It
you
does.
Really build trust over time. And so things over time become revealed that maybe patients or families were, you know, holding close,
right,
or holding back. Either embarrassed or feeling vulnerable to share,
right, right,
what was really happening at home or in their relationships with family members or with their own well-being. So,
wow. Mm-hmm. So that whole open up thing, you know, the inclusion part.
Well, and time again, research shows, who do people trust? They trust their physician the most,
that's right,
their medical provider. And you are an extension of that.
Correct.
So
that's right.
Oh, I love it.
Correct. And so when they reach out to us, we have a direct line to the physician as well, so it's very collaborative.
That's very good.
We were emailing, we became email friends as we were setting up for the show, and you shared that when you're making suggestions and connecting folks with resources, you try to, and I'm going to quote you, you try to achieve a delicate, ever-changing balance between safety and happiness for everyone involved. So, Brian, I think
go
you wrote
girl.
That. Tell us about the complexity
put
of achieving.
Put that on a T-shirt.
Oh, that was the English major coming out.
Right. It was a beautiful. Now I know why. That was a beautiful sentence.
Yeah.
So tell us
yeah.
about the complexity of achieving this balance between safety and happiness. And
wow.
what does that mean?
Yeah, I give credit to this phrase to Dr. Margaret Drickamer, who's one of the providers
yes.
at our clinic who recently retired.
Okay.
I'm super bummed because she was amazing. This is a provider who always said her second job would be comedian. And
oh, my goodness, I say that all the time.
She's
that's so cool.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's your current job. So
she came up with this idea, right, of balancing safety and happiness. And I just,
wow.
I adore it, right, because I think that it's very easy for a patient to get into the camp of, I want to do what I want to do,
yes.
right, and just focus on independence only. And of course, if you're feeling like your independence is being impaired or infringed upon, yeah, you're going to dig in your heels. You know,
yes.
I would too. And then on the caregiver side, you've often got a concern about safety,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like, hey, if we have to put them in a padded room, let's do it. You know, like because we got to keep them safe.
I've heard that even with my own family, make them do it or just don't do it. You know, and it's
right?
like, that's not.
It's not
like
gonna work.
You know, they're adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they still have
people,
their
yeah,
brain.
Independent
choice, like,
and people are allowed to make choices that,
yeah.
and even if they fail, they're
yes.
you know whatever our definition of failing is.
Right.
But yeah,
we all have the right to make bad decisions,
uh-huh.
like whatever you call bad, right? And maybe it's not bad. Maybe it's
exactly.
just you perceive
to me,
it as bad.
But not to you.
Right. Exactly.
Safety
right.
can create a tremendous amount of social isolation.
yes.
I was talking to
right.
a family an individual the other day, and I said, realize that. You know, when we ask older adults what you all want, you all, since that's a funny statement right there, but it's independence and choice and
that's
happiness.
Right.
Yes.
But if you ask adult children, because I was preparing him for when he talks to his son, and I get this as a daughter, you know, we do want safety.
Safety,
and it is this
control, predictability.
Balance. There is a complete disconnect, and we'll get more into this in a second, between a lot of times what family members want and what individuals. So how do you navigate that?
Yeah. Well, at first we have to understand everybody's perspective, and we have to do it in a way that makes it very clear that, you know, like I say, we have no skin in the game. We want what all of you want, and if you want different things, well, we're here to help you have that conversation,
mm-hmm.
yes.
right? But we're not inclined to push you in any certain way. The only time that would ever happen is if it was a safety issue so severe that we had to intervene.
Right.
And you know what those are. If someone's suicidal, if they're homicidal, if they are so endangered at home
right.
that they could, you know,
harm themselves.
Exactly.
Seriously
oh,
injured.
Even have the
right?
back where I used to work, it was, you know, and or if they're putting their newspaper on their oven while it's
cooking. Oh, right.
Exactly. You know, like, that's the safety for themselves and others.
Exactly. But if it doesn't rise to that level, there's room for discussion here, right? And oftentimes there's sort of a scaling part of this where we sort of say, you know, we all, right, take
yes.
a bath every day. We take a shower every day.
Yeah,
and some of us twice
holiday,
a day.
So some of us may have.
Some of us may have. On the weekends, we might.
Keep going.
Moving along.
Yes, sorry. Moving the point.
We have this idea in our culture that you have to take a shower every day, or you have to take a bath every day. You ask a dermatologist, I don't even think they would necessarily agree with that, right? There's plenty of
your hairstylist. It's not great for hair.
They're probably not going to love that, right? But we still have this idea, and so a caregiver will often. And say, well, at minimum, they need to shower every day. And I go, really? Like, do you? Really? Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, really?
Would you talk to my husband?
And I want to ask.
I tell him every day, and he's like, why?
Why? Why every
yeah.
day? I was like, are they smelling? Like, what's the issue?
Yeah,
here?
I mean, if there's an issue, but if there's not, okay, go on.
But, like, here's what I want to ask you, too. So, if you're looking at research into bathing and showering, which there actually is some.
Yes.
Not a ton, but a little bit. How many times a week do you think you have to take a bath or a shower in order to maintain skin integrity and basic health?
I'm going to say two. What are you going to say, Alicia?
Every day.
Every day.
All right. Well, Alicia, also, you have
Not
to understand, Alicia is a big exerciser and an instructor. So she's moving around a lot. She's
time.
Sweating
that's
a lot.
And that's one of the variables. That's all
right.
Right.
It's
a variable.
We talk about a lot of shows. I'm a much more sedentary person. We're somewhere between, I'm saying two, she's saying seven.
Okay.
What is the
realistically
research?
Three, maybe.
So for the average senior, the answer is one. You only
that
need
is not a good answer.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify.
Now, let's be clear.
If you're dealing with incontinence care, I mean,
exactly.
You want to
make let's
sure
be clear. There's
lots
of
variables, yes.
Right? It's always individual, and that's what we're there for, right? To have that discussion, like, hey, just so you know, the research says one. Now let's figure out what's right for you guys. But I'm just trying to get at it. Might not be seven.
Well, and also having been a part of end of life care for individuals,
mm-hmm.
and specifically a family member. You know, towards the end, the last few weeks and months, it was a sponge bath.
Right.
Because of the situation.
And let's
look
at energy conservation, too, and, right, you know, how much...
Yeah, okay, got it.
Is
water.
The bathing going to take out of them during... Nope, not
oh,
even their
really?
Water, their
yeah.
own energy. No, I'm glad you said that. No, just even their own energy,
like,
and will they have energy to
do
other
that.
Things in the
you
day? Where is the
that.
Balance there?
Right?
Yes, exactly.
Think about that.
And then you think,
variables.
Well, how's their cognitive status? Do they have dementia? People
mm-hmm.
with dementia are very often averse to bathing and showering.
It's very stressful.
It's an overwhelming sensory experience, and trying to do that every day is going to be very harmful.
And so, okay, so... So you talk with the families, you help them navigate this, what really needs to happen for safety
mm-hmm.
or what, and then how to really focus on happiness. How does that go? I mean, this isn't, we are talking about family caregivers a lot. I am curious about your experience and your lessons learned about navigating
mm-hmm.
that complexity between the needs of individuals and the needs of their family and caregivers.
The first thing I would say is I'm glad I'm trained as a therapist.
Right.
Mm.
We're very good listeners.
But yes, it can't be overstated, right? If you come in there and you're trying to say this is what needs to happen or this is what I want for you, you're not going to get anywhere.
Oh,
you're done.
You're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're done.
Mm-hmm.
What,
okay.
Someone once said, who was it who said, you have to earn the right to speak the truth?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay,
yeah.
Alicia, I get
that.
Our pen. There's always a moment.
Put it on the t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
You have to earn the right to speak the truth. And I think that's deeply, deeply true, that any of us, if I just came in here and started saying things that you thought were ridiculous, and I just said, no, trust me,
I do
I'm
that
an expert.
All the time.
I like that.
I'm a talker.
Trust me,
people
I'm an expert. I'm trained in
like
this. You're like, no, that doesn't fit my lived experience. I'm not going to believe it. But if we have that relationship, and you know me, and you trust me, and you know where I'm coming from, even if I'm saying something that's hard to hear, you're more likely to hear it.
Well, and also... kind of starting from that place of trust where I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here with
yeah.
you. I hear you based on your needs and goals and interests and desires, X, Y, Z, as opposed to just coming in. This is something I struggle with all the time because I'm very chatty and I have lots of ideas
and I
come in like, bah, 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 bah.
Make it happen. I come in with make it happen. Do it.
She does.
You'll get a chance to think about it.
Yeah.
I thought it.
And that's super common.
We're
mm-hmm.
And
so That makes sense. I like that shirt. Earn the
right.
Yeah,
put it on the shirt. Earn the right to speak the truth. But it's super common, and everyone's different, right? So sometimes you'll have a caregiver who was, I don't know, maybe they're a paralegal, and they're working right now, and they're very detail-oriented, and they want things just a certain way. They want the care plan written up, and they, you know, and they want every caregiver to be perfectly screened on a 10-point survey and ranked and rated, and they're trying to do all this while living their life and taking care of someone. And sometimes it can be really helpful to just step back and take the Winnicott approach and just say, good enough.
Good enough.
Our goal is good enough. What's good enough?
Mm-hmm.
Other times, you know, maybe the patient has a certain way of looking at things that is just very unique and different. We've had patients who, their whole lives, they've kind of just wandered. They've lived on people's couches, you know, they kind of couch surf around, and they prefer to be off the grid and in nature, you know, and it's like, and all of a sudden people are talking about putting them in assisted living.
Mm.
It's like
in
that,
a communal
that's never
environment where there's lots of people around, or yet that sense of projecting our own needs onto other people.
There it is, yep.
So, and it is so hard, I see it as we all do in our world every day, where then caregivers get involved. It is, you know, I'm going to keep bringing it back to the caregiver because that's it's our month, it's our focus, and caregivers all of a sudden then put their own issues on top of it,
mm-hmm.
And they exhaust themselves. Mm-hmm. I know that because one of the things I was told to ask you about, they said, I think it was Kim and Kendall, they said, oh, you got to talk to Brian. He does a great presentation on caregiver burnout prevention.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these caregivers either by the literal needs of their loved one and they're physically exhausted, or what I see a lot more and experience myself, the emotional exhaustion of really taking, getting much more involved with your loved one. And so how do you prevent burnout? And Alicia and I are very, very close on this topic.
You're on pins and needles, ready for me to deliver the truth, the answer. I wish I had it. I wish it was that simple, right?
You got to give the answer.
please, I'm begging you. The answer is, it's complicated. It depends, right? That's every social worker's answer to everything. But that's why we want to talk about people's individual situation. Because, of course, what would help and prevent burnout or address burnout for one person wouldn't do anything for another. You know, for me, who's very accustomed and comfortable with therapy, I need to have a therapist, and I need to have that support. That's going to help prevent and treat my burnout. Someone who's never experienced that, and maybe was even harmed by therapists in the past,
yes,
not the right approach to take, mm-hmm. right? Maybe
I
we should focus
sleep.
On
sleep. I was
something
exhausted
else.
When I was doing 24/7. I needed sleep and
real
just
sleep.
Someone else. I needed another set of hands, someone else to come in and take over
for a little while. Just a little. Was it Allison Smith?
Oh, Allison Smith was here last week to talk about their respite program.
Yes, respite.
Not last week. That was Thanksgiving. The week before Thanksgiving was all about respite.
And when you said rest, you just want to have.
Yeah,
rest.
For me, it was during the pandemic, so there was no respite. Oh. It was bringing someone else in, and it was end of life. Yeah. Okay, so go on. So
that's a huge part of it, and I actually want to turn it over to Jen here. Could you talk a little bit about respite and, like, the different ways families find that and how we approach that idea?
Are you all connected with that as well?
Not necessarily the program, but we do a huge part of what we do is helping people get to the respite care.
Oh, okay.
Right, and the respite looks different, again, depending on what works for a family and for us, it's patients, but for the individual, in terms of it might be someone coming into the home to provide a break, to give the caregiver time, even in the house, mm-hmm. to do their own things, or a way to get out of the house to help within the home. For other families, it's the best option is for the patient to go into a facility for a certain amount of time where they can be safe and be cared for while, you know, maybe the caregiver gets a vacation. Wow.
Wowee.
Some of them can't even imagine.
Maybe
for a weekend so they can catch up on their sleep, like you were just saying, Heather. You know, I mean, so there's a lot of different ways that respite can happen.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. We do so many different ways. And, you know, so there's very concrete, practical things you can do, right? You can hire a care manager. You can do a short-term respite stay at a facility. Some of these get expensive, yes?
Yes, they do.
They mm-hmm. can be very expensive.
Yeah.
However, social workers, right? We have resources for everything.
You can find your magic tool bag.
There's ways. You know, the Orange County Department on Aging, Aging Transitions Program in particular, if you have dementia, the Duke Dementia Family Support Program, the Dementia Alliance, like they mm-hmm. can actually help you get funds to pay for this.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And it might not be totally free, right? But it might reduce it significantly, or it might be free in some cases.
It would help.
And every little bit helps. Come on, we're desperate.
I know.
You know, and maybe we get creative. Maybe we go, so your respite is going to be the Seymour Center.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe maybe we're going to do a structured program like Charles House.
Mm-hmm. Adult day programs.
Adult day programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Soul to Stay Center up mm-hmm. in Hillsboro. Like, maybe we're going to go that route. So the practical stuff is a lot of what we do, obviously. The other piece of it that I'm always looking at is the cognitive side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, here's a caregiver who's super involved, eyes on, hands on, all the time, mm-hmm. doing everything.
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Yeah. What's going on there?
If I don't, then nobody else will do it, and then my loved one will die.
Will
exactly.
Die.
They'll fall.
That's it.
Yep.
That's
they'll
exactly
walk
it.
Out and trap. They take on so much pressure.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
I know I'm with people that I work with, family and friends. I forgive them proactively. There's
like
a good chance a fall is going to happen. There's a crisis is going to happen. You're looking at a progressive illness. It's going to progress, and it is not your fault.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is. There's a fair amount of fear that goes into it, and all
and
of us who have parents and
right.
end up caregiving for our parents,
my
we're not trained for that.
No, my sister
no.
and I had to do a pact. I said, if mom falls on your watch, I do not blame you, and when she falls on my watch, do not blame me.
That's right.
And it did on all of our watches.
I know.
And I think there is this sort of fear.
Feeling, and there's
and
a huge
guilt.
Guilt,
fear, and guilt. Those are the two biggest ones I see.
And you said we jump in it not knowing that we don't know how to do it, but we think we know how to do it. we just start doing it.
You don't know what you don't know.
And that's from love and care. Right.
Right. But that's not professional.
But that's,
we don't know how to let go is the issue, is to sort of say, all right, I know I need a few hours. I'm going to let someone else in. And they may do that. I know.
Asking for help is hard for a lot of people.
Accepting the help. And I know I was with a talk. It was actually with Paul Cleaver at the Charles House that says it actually doesn't help your loved one to be so involved that then they only learn to rely on you. It actually, because you can create a situation where you really can't leave them because there's going to be so much distress. Like, bring in help earlier.
Right.
Because they do rely on.
Make your circle bigger. All right.
Oh.
But it's. Your other suggestions, Brian, because I know
no,
we're
no, that's great. Like,
burnout talk.
One of my other sort of t-shirt talking points is that we train others how to treat us. We train others how to treat us. Right?
Cool.
Every time we interact with someone, we are training them how to treat us. We are expressing to them what we expect, what is unexpected, what is acceptable, and what's unacceptable. Right, so a huge part of the discussion is setting boundaries.
Mm.
We talk about this. We know it's super
setting
hard.
Setting boundaries for whom?
Mm-hmm. The caregiver.
The caregiver.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Knowing what you're okay with and what you're not okay with. And what happens when your boundaries get transgressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Natural consequences.
Yes. There's a lot of boundaries that I know that I had and others had that by the situation, especially with the pandemic, and that there's a lot of hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of personal care that
mm-hmm.
people sort of say. I just bought the Hello Game, and I got it, and it said, I like it said it very classy. Who's the person that you would want helping you in the bathroom, and who's the person that you would least want helping you in the bathroom?
Mm.
And, like, let's start to, and I know for some people that's the boundaries. Like, they'll help with finances or they'll help with scheduling, but they don't want to help a parent in the bathroom, but then that time comes.
And what do you do?
And what do you do?
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. So hopefully we've already had that discussion of who else can step in and help. But indeed, there's a lot of the cognitive stuff is like checking that fear. Is the fear realistic? Like if I've had a caregiver who said, I can't take a 30-minute nap.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I take a 30-minute nap, they could start to get up out of the
mm-hmm.
chair and they could fall.
Yes. Okay.
And I go, okay, that's possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
But can we sort of reduce the odds of that happening and still let you test this out? So maybe we'll start with a 10-minute cat nap, right? Where you just close your eyes, you're not even really sleeping. And I just want to see what happens with that. And sometimes nothing happens, right? That doesn't eliminate the fear. It can't. But if you start to do little experiments like that, often in therapy is the context for this, you start to learn that your fears aren't quite as realistic or as catastrophic as you thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you the freedom to open up. Another way you can try this is maybe you try that hired caregiver. You're not committing for the rest of your life. Hire them for a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's expensive, but maybe you can get a little support for it, or maybe it's just worth it for a try. And you see how it feels, and you tell yourself, you know what, this caregiver is not going to do as well as I would do.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good enough.
I just saw an article 2 days ago, and someone said, the caregiver just came and just sat on the couch the whole time.
Yeah.
And the person said, but did your loved one fall? And they said, no. And they went, okay, because if you have, and I definitely, when we had other caregivers say, well, okay, here's all these other things you can do, but if they're doing lots of cleaning or they're doing lots of cooking, they're actually not, they don't have eyes on your loved one. So it was an interesting, I had to take a step back with that, and I thought, well, it depends on why they're there. If they're there for safety, you actually don't want them out of the room doing all these other tasks, and so, yeah, that's a hard, okay.
That's a great, is exactly what I'm talking about, though, right? Because we all have this idea, hey, if I hire a caregiver, they better not be on their phone.
Yeah, or well, they're just sitting there the whole time, and
but if they're in the other room,
you know,
what happens
then
when
they're not helping either.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. It is. It's fascinating.
It is, and we got to remember the realities of caregiving. Like in this country, who is your caregiver? Well, they're probably working for close to minimum wage. They're probably working multiple jobs. They got their own stressful life. Somebody called me up furious because the caregiver fell asleep on the couch. It's like, that poor girl, she must have been so exhausted. Yeah, I get it. We should probably look for someone else or at least talk with her about this. But at least we can have empathy even for that.
To understand. Yeah. Right.
Right? And we know that, hey, nobody has the answer here. We're all kind of struggling through this together in a very, very broken system, and no one's trained to do any of this stuff. But
that's our whole other topic, how to fix the broken system.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
So through your experiences working with patients and families, you know, what do you – your few, because I know we have just a few minutes left, your takeaways. What do you wish more patients knew? What do you wish more family caregivers knew? Looking at Jennifer.
You are.
I am.
And I'm looking
and
all
I'm looking
around.
Like,
That's a big question.
I know.
That's
I
a big question. Does something pop into your mind, Brian?
I actually do have one, because it comes from my caregiver presentation about managing stress. So what the most common objection I hear to caregiver self-care, right, taking care of yourself, taking a break, whatever, is I don't have enough time.
Yes, I
that's true.
That's
there's
why you're
no
all
time.
The time. I'm part of a caregiver
I'm there.
There's no time.
Yeah, there is
right?
no time.
So what I would like to argue and propose is that it's not a question of time, it's a question of priorities.
Yes.
And what you're really saying is I am choosing not to prioritize myself. Now, there may be times when that is truly necessary. I get that. But there's a lot of times when it's not. And I sort of approach this by saying, you know, not many of us will say, oh, I didn't go to work today. I didn't have time. Sorry about that. No, it doesn't even occur to us to think that way because obviously work is top priority. What if we moved ourselves up the priority list a little bit? And what if we did it not just for selfish reasons, because we need it, which we feel is selfish. I would argue it's not.
I know.
But because people who take care of themselves are better caregivers.
It's the whole, remember to put your own oxygen, it's so cliche, but put your own oxygen mask on first before others on the plane.
That's right.
Yeah.
I like to say you can't pour from an empty vessel.
I know, but I am part of the North Carolina Caregiver Champions Group, and we talked about this, and we're caregivers across the lifespan, so a number of them are parents with children with complex needs, and it is one of the things that drives caregivers crazy when people say, well, go get a massage or go take some time, and they're like,
how? There's no way.
I have focused on is the little moments of joy. The little moments. For me, it was English breakfast tea. I like tea. It was just a good cup of tea, and making sure that, and when I was living with my parents to take care of them when I blew off my husband and children, my parents had a Keurig, which to me I think is such an extravagance, like to do it. But I was like, ooh, I got little English breakfast teacups. And I, you know, like the pods. And for me, it was that moment each day where I could have, well, five different times a day when I keep having. But it was like that. I'm going to get my favorite tea. And I'm going to have, if I'm going to be up all night, I'm going to have a Coke and a chicken sandwich at 4 in the morning. Because I'm not going to bed anyway.
And I'm going to listen to my favorite music.
The TV on. And I was like, you know what, Mom, let's watch my favorite TV show. Thank goodness you like HGTV. And we got into it. But it was trying to find joy within the confines.
Right.
It was really hard to leave.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, how could I find. So for me, it's these small moments of joy that add a little bit of self-care.
You can get really creative, too. I mean, I've heard of people having their therapy session in the car while they're driving the kids home or picking up grandma. You know, like, there's ways to do it. It's hard, and you might need someone to think through it with you or get you that respite care so you can do it, but that's the name of the game, figuring it out.
It's to try and to bring in help and to talk with folks like you, because you really are amazing at identifying resources that may be low cost or no cost or that people hadn't considered or to just give permission. Yes. That it's okay to bring in help, that you're still a great daughter, you're still a great spouse, you're still, if you're, you know, this martyr complex that we all have, and I add myself to that. So
we all want to be perfect, right? It's okay that you lost your temper at your mom last night.
I did that once, and we had a recording of it, because we had cameras up.
I needed that for yesterday.
And asking for help before you're desperate for it, I think, goes a lot.
Before the fuse is blown.
That would be great. It's a lot easier for us then.
Well, so we have a minute left. So tell us, speaking of asking for help, what do you want to make sure that listeners know about connecting with you and connecting with the UNC Geriatric Clinic, or connecting with resources in general? This is your kind of your kiss goodbye time.
Yeah, please give us a call. I mean, our website is up. The number's easy. It's 984-974-6599. If you call that, you can get an appointment or talk more, learn more about the clinic. Happy to tell you.
And what's the website?
Yeah, if you know, I don't know. They keep changing it on us. But
if you Google UNC Geriatrics Clinic,
it should come up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then Jennifer, things for you. Your kiss goodbye in terms of resources and supports for people that you'd like them to know about before we sign off.
I just like to tell people to ask. Right? You don't know what you don't know what exists unless you ask for it. So there's a lot of different people in the community, including you, Heather, right, and Alicia, that know things that might be helpful. And so I think the more that caregivers are able to say, "Wow, I really wish," whatever it is, it might be possible. You know.
Well, thank you. Thank you for everything that you do. What a wonderful way to end National Family Caregivers Month. But as we know, this work never ends. Mm-hmm. And it is so wonderful to know there are resources like the UNC Geriatrics Clinic, like Brian and Jennifer. We cannot thank you enough. And to our listeners, make sure to listen next week, December 7th, when we have our driver safety assessment event, and with everyone, be well, stay, take care of each other. All right. We'll be right back.